You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Evan Banks.
And I'm Deanna Lee. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's June 14th.
Ukraine remains at great risk in its fight against Russian aggression. But according to RAND's Howard Schatz, it's not all bad news. To start, Western allies are finally making good on their promise to support Ukraine for as long as it takes, providing Kyiv with significant economic assistance, weapons, security deals, and command freedom on the battlefield. This new wave of support from the West started last December when the European Council agreed to open negotiations for Ukraine to join the EU. Although the path to Ukraine's EU membership will be challenging, this is a key first step, demonstrating solid commitment from the EU. Also in December, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an executive order that gave the Department of the Treasury authority to sanction banks that facilitate transactions that help Russia's war effort. This measure has since hampered Russia's international payments and trade and led some banks to cut ties with Russia. 2024 brought more notable support from the EU and the US, including tens of billions of dollars in grants, loans, and aid. And even more recently, a growing number of Ukraine's supporters, including the US, are now allowing the weapons they've supplied to be fired at military targets in Russian territory. This may give Kyiv a potential boost on the battlefield as it hopes to counter Russia's ongoing offensive on Kharkiv. Ukraine itself has also taken steps to improve its position. Its skillful economic policymaking has maintained financial stability within the country despite the toll of the war. Schatz says that these developments and others have allowed Ukraine to gain the momentum that can help it protect its independence, achieve a favorable outcome in the war, and ultimately embark on a successful reconstruction.
In 2020, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission began requiring publicly traded companies to include information about their efforts to attract, develop, and retain workers as part of companies' annual disclosures. These newly mandated filings contain important nuggets about how companies are investing in people. And, according to recent RAND research, this information can often predict stock performance. RAND economists Jeffrey Wenger and George Zhou used AI to analyze SEC disclosures over more than 20 years, rate how every large public retailer disclosed investments in their frontline workers, and assessed how these data were connected to stock prices. They found that the retailers that made strong and specific disclosures about investing in workers saw their short-term stock prices increase anywhere from 2% within 2 weeks of the disclosure to 2.5% within 30 days of the disclosure. Backing such companies could be a solid long-term play for investors, too. This study should hit a nerve in today's market, say Wenger and Zhou. Investors are hungry for companies that play the long game, including when it comes to their employees. Plus, companies are navigating a crunch for talent. And no matter what companies and investors choose to do going forward, the bottom line is clear. Companies that put their money where their mouth is, investing in their frontline workers, could see a non-trivial uptick in their financials if they were clearer and more direct about what they were doing.
The U.S. government offers dozens of programs to help transitioning service members and veterans find and develop fulfilling careers in civilian life. A new RAND report examines the costs and benefits of these programs. Here are some of the key findings. Most employment transition programs are actually focused on education, while very few programs, and just a small amount of funding, are dedicated to helping service members and veterans translate their military skills to the civilian labor market, find civilian apprenticeships or jobs, or connect with civilian employers. Overall, there is limited evidence that federally funded employment transition programs are effective. Some programs have no reported data, evaluation plans, or outcome measures. And in some cases, the evidence is counterintuitive. For example, the DoD's transition assistance program is associated with lower wages for participants. Finally, transition programs overall face limited oversight and budgetary scrutiny, and the authors of the study identified redundancies among transition programs and services. The authors also provide some recommendations to help address these issues. For instance, redundancies could be eliminated by consolidating programs that provide on-the-job training in specific skill sets. This would improve outreach, reduce overhead costs, and avoid duplications of effort. It would also help to focus more on employment support, in addition to education. For example, this could include investing in programs that offer personalized support to help speed up military-to-civilian transitions. The government could also mandate consistent and routine budget reporting for all programs that support these transitions.
In 1949, U.S. Secretary of State Dean Acheson said that the creation of NATO was essential to the, quote, restoration of the economic and political health of the world. From the outset of the Cold War, the link between economic stability and security was not only pivotal in the formation of the Western military alliance, but also in Washington's broader strategy for deterring the Soviet Union. In 2024, as NATO celebrates its 75th anniversary, economic issues remain more relevant than ever. That's according to RAND researcher Anna Dowd and Dominik Jankowski, the deputy permanent representative of Poland to NATO. Fortifying economic deterrence should be a central pillar of NATO's strategy to enhance transatlantic security, they say. Dowd and Jankowski outline four keys to achieving this. First, NATO should reintroduce regular high-level meetings focused on economic matters. This would help ensure that economic security remains a priority and is integrated into the broader strategic objective of the alliance. Second, NATO should rebuild economic security capabilities at NATO headquarters. The dissolution of the NATO Economic Committee has left a significant gap in the capability of the alliance to conduct thorough economic analysis. That gap could be filled by establishing a new internal mechanism and a structure dedicated to the coordination of economic topics. Third, NATO should strengthen its global partnerships. In particular, it should enhance existing strategic partnerships with the EU and Indo-Pacific countries and form new partnerships. Fourth and finally, NATO should leverage the economic security agenda to sync up military and non-military instruments of power. Enhancing resilience today demands a high degree of coordination between civilian and military sectors, including the efficient integration of civilian resources into military plans. Dowd and Jankowski point out that the upcoming NATO summit in Washington, D.C. is a pivotal opportunity to make progress in these and other areas. Quote, by reintegrating economic security into its strategic considerations, NATO can ensure a more comprehensive and resilient deterrent posture for the future. We'll be covering NATO a lot more on the show between now and the summit in Washington next month. But if you want to go deep on some of the important strategic questions RAND researchers are exploring as the summit approaches, then check out rand.org/NATO75.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.